Everybody's taking that test. Not that I know of, at least. Are you taking the test? You must be. Are you taking the test? You taking the test? The anatomy test? No. The test. It is just the test. Even the MCAT has a name, but no, the anatomy test is simply called the test. Mano a mano. Hand to hand. What? A canine anatomy. Excellent. Now this is, who's the teacher for that? Dr. Who? Cadell, of course. Very nice. Dog anatomy. Very nice. They're almost as complicated as humans. Same parts, just different orientation. All right, kind of like me and, who's the, my mind, who's the lead actor in Ocean's 11? George Clooney. George Clooney is, he and I are exactly alike, except how different we are. Sort of like the dog and the human. Same parts, different arrangement. Let's pray, shall we? Dear Lord, again, thank you for this day. Please be with those who are studying and stressed about this the test that's coming up. We ask that you would be with them, strengthen them, give them the ability to recall these intricate relationships and how the Latin can help them understand how the different pieces fit together. But Lord, it's a complicated thing. You've created a marvelous creation in the human body, the epitome of what we know of creation here on this planet. We're grateful that we are able to learn about ourselves and to use that understanding to help others have a better quality of life. Thank you so much for loving us. Keep us safe during the rain. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. All right. Well, interestingly enough, have you seen this? This is chapter 12, overhead 11. Have you seen that equation before? Have you seen it before other places? Did you see it in systems physiology at all? And you did a few calculations with it, is that right? Okay. All right. Now, Dr. Stout give you an idea of what the value of what KM could be understood to mean as, what it could be meaning, the various meanings of KM? Do you remember any of the ones that he gave you? KM? What is the name of KM? How do you describe it? Well, it's the Michaelis-Menten constant. And you're supposed to recall this forever, and it describes a rectangular hyperbola. And you see here we've got sort of a first-order rate reaction here, and then a zeroth order down here as the increased concentration of the substrate means less and less velocity increase to where you have an infinite amount of substrate. You'd only reach that line called Vmax, maximum rate of how fast that enzyme can produce products. The operational definition of KM is very straightforward and needs to be memorized. And it is, as it's quoted there, if the substrate concentration S equals the KM, then the V0 is equal to half max. V0 means half max. So why don't you close the quote here after the S. I started the quote and I forgot to close it right there. Small values of KM mean that the enzyme becomes saturated at low concentrations of S. Those two statements cannot be contradicted. They are absolutely true because the first statement is actually a mathematical statement based on the equation itself. For example, if the substrate concentration S equals KM, then V0 equals 1/2 Vmax. Well, if S is equal to KM, then KM is equal to S. And we can substitute that. And so you'd have an S plus an S, and S plus an S, of course, is what? 2S. So on the denominator, you'd have 2S. On the numerator, you'd have a Vmax divided by S. And so you'd have this really trivial equation. V0 is equal to Vmax S, whoops, all over 2S. And guess what you can do with the S's here? Algebra 1, 8th grade algebra, and so you have V0 is equal to Vmax divided by 2, or half Vmax. So that is the one definition that you can know without contradiction. It seems patently obvious, but nevertheless, it has actual some practical meaning to it, other than simply that simple equation and so on. But notice here in this diagram that they have the substrate concentrations in terms of km, 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 1 km, 2 km, 3 km, 4 km, 5 km. In other words, these are so that the units of km will always match the same units of the substrate concentration. So if the substrate concentration is in micromoles per liter, then the km value has to be in micromoles per liter, et cetera, et cetera. All right. So the KM values can vary widely as well. Values, of course, depend on pH and temperature, some degree. KM measures the affinity of the substrate and enzyme. It's not. Some people try to make more out of the KM than it actually allows them to. They say it's a measure. It is a measure of the affinity. It isn't really. The best you can say is that small values of KM mean the enzyme becomes saturated at low concentrations of substrate. Now, if you recall, as an example, you have glucose in going to glucose 6-phosphate, and this is a part of the glycolytic pathway. What enzyme goes here? What's the name of the enzyme you memorized? Hexokinase. Correct. Hexokinase. There is a second enzyme that does the same thing. This one is called glucokinase. Glucokinase. Now, hexokinase pretty much exists in all tissues. But glucokinase primarily exists in liver. Oh, and there's one other tissue. Is it liver and muscle? I'm going to have to put a question mark beside that. But it's liver and muscle. It's certainly liver, for sure. It's one other tissue that's primarily a part of. So every tissue has hexokinase. Some tissues have glucokinase. That means the liver has both hexokinase and glucokinase. Does that make sense? The liver has both hexokinase and glucokinase. However, when you look at the KMs, the KM for hexokinase is 0.5 millimolar, whereas the glucokinase, these are approximate, 5 millimolar. So the KMs are different by a power of 10 in this diagram. You may see numbers that are different other locations, but I'm using this as an illustration of the importance or relationship between the KM value and its practical reality. As you know, liver is designed to be a carbohydrate buffer in the blood. That when you've had breakfast, like I have, there's a large bolus of carbohydrate in the stomach and the small intestine, and you have large amounts of carbohydrate coming into the blood from the gut. In conjunction with insulin and the pancreas and other organs, the liver then responds to that excess glucose by absorbing the glucose. Simply absorbing the glucose simply by concentration gradient. There's more glucose in the blood than there is in the liver cell. And so glucose enters into the liver cell. What traps it there and keeps it there is this first chemical reaction, the hexokinase and the glucokinase. Because once it gets that phosphate on there, it cannot be transported by that glucose transporter that allowed it to come in. So it gets trapped in the liver as glucose 6-phosphate, and therefore it has, and then it has, of course, different fates. For me, for example, I'm not particularly using a lot of energy, so
I'm probably having only a standard amount of glycolysis undergo. The pentose phosphate pathway, of course, is probably rolling. Pentose phosphate pathway. I don't need probably a lot of
amino acid synthesis. I don't need a lot of synthesis right now. I hopefully am not making a lot of fat, so I hope I won't be needing a lot of NADPH out of this. What's likely to happen, of course, is that glucose-6-phosphate is going to get made in glycogen by glycogen synthase. And so that's what's happening right now, is that I'm probably restoring the stores of glycogen in my liver that I lost overnight when I'm not eating and before breakfast. Okay, so that's the fate of glucose-6-phosphate once it gets in. And, of course, hexokinase and glucokinase are in those tissues, in the liver cells. But they have distinctively different KMs. And so you can imagine what happens here if, in fact, for example, I have a bolus of carbohydrate. We're going to take a look at the blood. And let's say the blood after a breakfast of a dozen donuts, let's call it 7 millimolar concentration in the blood. That's a really relatively high amount. 5 millimolar is standard. You'll find that uncontrolled diabetes has a power of 10 greater or more than this concentration. So immediately what you find is if it's 7 millimolar outside, it's going to try to get 7 millimolar inside as the glucose moves into the liver cell. Notice what I said here about the impact of the KMs. This KM is relatively low compared to the ordinary, to the KM of the glucokinase. At 7 millimolar concentration in the blood, this one is maxed out. At this concentration, this is 0.5 millimolar is half V max, and you're already up to 7. This thing's maxed out, but you still have more glucose that needs to be brought in. Well, notice here with the KM at 5 millimolar, that this is just now beginning to become just over half max. So the two, the hexokinase and the glucokinase, work in synergy, in conjunction with each other. Typically, the hexokinase under normal circumstances is highly active and sometimes near Vmax under ordinary circumstances. And therefore, whenever you have this large bolus of sugar in the blood, how do you get all that out of the blood quickly? This is where the glucokinase and its relatively high KM comes into play and starts to become more active. This is not a regulatory aspect, but it reaches closer to its Vmax or half Vmax as this blood concentration nears its half Vmax of 5 millimolar or exceeds it. So you can say, because of the low KM of hexokinase, that this is always running at a fairly high velocity, and it can be overwhelmed by excess glucose in the blood. But when that happens, a second enzyme that exists that does the same thing in the liver and other tissues begins to become active and allows for that excess glucose to be brought in and trapped as glucose-6-phosphate. So this is both an important aspect of carbohydrate metabolism as well as an illustration of the importance of KM and its relative values of KM and what it can mean. All right, well, let's go ahead here. Another couple of things. NOP. I probably, like I said, I need to redo this, the letters. But at any rate, so we're now on overhead number 8. There's a couple other numbers you need to be aware of. In the box, I think, is what I'm going to ask you to put in. The first one, this is on overhead number 8. It's KCAT, lowercase k, subscripted CAT, is equal to Vmax divided by bracket capital E, bracket T. All right, Vmax all over ET. Of course, the ET stands for the...
It's a T. So that's the enzyme total. The total amount of enzyme in the system that you're looking at. So this is called a catalytic constant, sometimes called a turnover number. This is how fast, what's the maximum, how fast can an enzyme produce a particular product? That's called the turnover number. For simple systems, which you'll be working with in this class, the K2 is the equivalent to the K-cat. The K2 is equivalent to the K-cat. It is, in fact, a true constant because it's a... because of the way it's situated. Vmax varies with enzyme concentration. The more enzyme you have in a system, the higher the overall velocity of the product. But nevertheless, because you divide it by the enzyme total, you get this K-cat. Vmax divided by enzyme total and K-cat. Now, one thing I need to put in there, typically, the Vmax is in moles or millimoles per second or per minute or whatever. And so the enzyme total typically deals with the total number of active sites that you have put into a system. Because you can have some enzymes that have more than one active site. So you have a single protein or a multimer, like a tetramer or a hexamer or something. Each of one of those subunits has an active site. And so one mole of an enzyme might in fact have 6 moles of the active site. So this concentration here is, for example, the moles of active site. So circle that ET and point to it or something and say moles or millimoles of active site. Not merely the number of moles of the enzyme concentration, but the moles of active site. Now, if you only have one active site per protein molecule, well then the moles of the enzyme and the moles of the active site will be the same. But if you have multiple numbers of active sites per mole, it's the number of moles of active site. Again, this is a turnover number. It gives you, it's a unitless number. It's like 1,200 per second, or 800 per second, or 12,000 per second, whatever. Okay, now then, another term is called KCAT over KM. This is called this apparent second-order rate constant enzyme. The rate of the reaction varies directly with how often the substrate and enzyme substrate encounter each other in solution. It's a quantity. KCAT over KM is therefore a measure of enzyme's catalytic efficiency. So, in other words, once a substrate can contact the enzyme, how quickly can that enzyme turn that substrate into a product? How quickly can a substrate be turned into a product? How fast can that enzyme turn that substrate into a product? Notice I'm kind of repeating myself. And so it really deals with the enzyme's catalytic efficiency. It's sort of related to this, but it not really. It actually deals more with the mechanism involved with it. The most efficient enzymes have values near the diffusion-controlled upper limit. Diffusion-controlled upper limit. What that means is diffusion-controlled upper limit. Can someone perhaps have an idea of what that might mean? Diffusion-controlled upper limit. Remember, we're talking about an enzyme and a substrate that's in solution. All right, well, allow me to simply illustrate this for you. For example, I'm going to go up here and shake Daniel's hand. Daniel doesn't mind. Do you mind, Daniel? Okay, so he's the enzyme on the substrate. We're in solution, is that correct? What causes me to move over to him where he is? Was it? Brownian movement. Is Brownian movement infinite? Is it instantaneous? No, Brownian movement literally is a random movement through three-dimensional space. Is that correct? So if I'm wandering around here, he's up there wandering around, I'm being bounced around in three dimensions, okay? All right. What's limiting how fast I can get there? Well, that's the idea of diffusion-controlled limit. In other words, I as a substrate were dropped over here in this part of the solution. He's over there in that part of the solution. I have a relatively high concentration here. And there's over there where he is, there's very few substrate molecules. So I'm moving over there simply because there's a higher concentration here where I am, and I'm moving spontaneously over there just because I can. I'm diffusing. All right? So there's an upper limit at how fast I can diffuse because of Brownian movement. Sometimes I'm going to wander over here and shake this enzyme's hand. Of course, unfortunately, he and I are not substrated and don't fit together. I'm not a substrate for this enzyme. I ran into him, but there was no chemical reaction. I ran into you. You're no chemical reaction here, but over here, suddenly I run into him, and boom, we shake hands, and there's magic happens. Okay? But what took me to get it? What did it take to get over there? It took time to get over there because it takes diffusion to get over there. All right? So what's going on here is that I come over here and I contact him, and depending on how fast the catalytic mechanism occurs, sometimes our handshake is relatively slow. Okay? But sometimes our handshake happens quickly. Boom. And I'm done. In other words, as soon as I contact him, chemical reaction occurs. That's the diffusion control limit. What did I do with my clicker? What did I do with it? Ah, thank you. Exactly. Very much. Appreciate that. I should just have you run this. And then I wouldn't have to do anything. All right. Just stand up there and talk. All right. If there's the most efficient enzyme is near the diffusion controlled limit, that is called catalytic perfection. Catalytic perfection. The instant that the molecule can touch the enzyme, it gets reacted. Catalytic perfection. It's a high standard. But you have to understand one thing. You have to understand that as a diffusion-controlled molecule, I'm not always approaching him from where his catalytic cleft is. Sometimes I'm coming in from the backside. Okay? There's no law that says the substrate and the enzyme have to meet with the cleft always pointing toward the active cleft, the site pointed toward the substrate. He's tumbling and turning in three-dimensional space. I'm tumbling and turning in three-dimensional space. We're diffusing close to each other, but as soon as we get approaching, boom, bam, we're done. Let's do this. Like that. Boom, catalytic perfection. It's an amazing thing, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I keep emphasizing it. Now, let's go on. Now, what other kinds of information can we disguise or discover from from enzyme kinetic data? We can have an idea about the effect of inhibitors on the rate. Let me rephrase this: the change in the kinetics of an enzyme due to an inhibitor, whether it's an artificial inhibitor or an excess of product, can tell us something about the mechanism that the enzyme is undergoing. So, the first step in understanding how a mechanism can be altered, or how we can understand what a mechanism is to figure out how to calculate Km and Vmax. They are, in fact, experimentally determined. Right, and you can take this, you take this equation, the Michaelis-Menten equation, and you do a very simple manipulation, algebraic manipulation, and you can create this plot right here, where you have 1 over V0 is equal to Km over Vmax times 1 over S plus 1 over Vmax. Do you see the relationship between that and a linear algebraic equation? where the y value is the 1 over v0, the x is 1 over s, and the slope, or m, is km over vmax, and the y-intercept is 1 over vmax. You see that? So what all you have to do to get this slope is to plot 1 over v0 versus 1 over s, where 1 over s is the independent variable and 1 over v0 is the dependent variable. So this intercept here on the y line is called 1 over vmax. The intercept on the x value is negative 1 over the km. And the slope, as you can see here, is km over vmax. You need to recall the intercepts and slope. Let's see here. What did I say there? Forever. And that means actually past the end of this semester. All right, let's go ahead. Now, how do you get that? What do you plot? What did I say was the independent variable and the dependent variable? What did I say that was? So here on this graph, calculate the Km and Vmax for the two enzyme reactions below. So what you're going to have is you're going to have four lines, two of which are already listed there. You can use these on your own. And you're going to have an S, and you're going to have a V0, which is the initial velocity. Those are given up here. You can see where the S is in moles per liter, and its velocity in micromoles per minute is adjacent to it. And then you're going to have another form that you get. You're going to have to create a 1 over S and a 1 over V0 to make it that way. So if you have a 1.0 times 10 to the minus 3, and yet that velocity is 65 micromoles per minute, what's 1 over S? So can someone, does anybody bring their calculator today? Anybody for a chance bring your calculator today? I think I've lent my calculator out, and now I don't have it. So basically, all right, I'll take it. Thank you very much. We'll just do a little bit of this, and then I'll show you what you can do otherwise. So first of all, we turn it on, and there's a bunch of numbers on there. May I clear these? Okay, sure. All right. So you have obviously 1, exponent, chain sign 3. And boy, how do you do the inverse of that? No. Let's see here. I'll just do this. 1, let's see here, divided by parentheses, 1, let's see here, exponent, chain sign 3, close parentheses, enter. Of course, what is that? What's the inverse of 1 over 10 to the minus 3? What is that? That's 1,000. Yes. Not, doesn't take too much to figure that one out. And then, of course, you have, we'll clear that, and then we inverse the 65, so we have 1 divided by 65. That turns out to be 1.53 times 10 to the minus 2. Well, you do that for all of them. You do that for all of them, and then you end up having a plot. Now, I just see if I can. This is going to be a tricky thing. I hope, and I should do this. I'm going to see if I can find this thing. Let's see here. Kind name. Let's see here. Enzyme. Oh, that didn't work. Enzyme. No, it doesn't work. Enzyme. Let's see here. Kinetics. Oh, contents. Kinetics? No kinetics. Let's see here. What else would it be? Lineweaver Burke. There we go. There it is. All right. Let's see here. I don't have, well, let's just start one.
Let's just click on that one and see what we get. Chapter 12, question number 4, Lineweaver Burke plot. So, and there it comes. There we go. All right. So, you can use Excel for this pretty readily. Here you see, oh, come on. Let me, I have to take this, unplug it. So, here you see, you see micromoles here. There's a velocity. What I did here was, there's two velocities. There's a velocity zero and a velocity inhibited, but that's a different issue. So here you see the substrate. Here you see the 1 over substrate. Here you see the velocity. There's a 1 over velocity. And so you can use, of course, common Excel functions to create that. Here you can see where all I did was I simply took whatever A2 was and inverted it and put it here. And you can see then I simply go down the line, and that's what that is. So I do the inversions there. And, of course, then over here I've got 10.4 as a velocity, and I go over 1 over V0. There it is 1 over this, 1 over B2, and I go down the line like that, and we get it. And we get it. So, anyway, so we get this 1 over S and 1 over V0, and you end up using the graph generator that you find on Excel to produce the graph that you see right here. See, it says series 1 trend line. There's actually, you create a trend line like this. I'll show you how to do this. Today's Wednesday, is that right? I'll show you how to do this on Friday. What's scheduled for tomorrow? Is there anything scheduled for tomorrow? Is it an empty day tomorrow? Really? There's no quizzes or anything, is there? I don't think there is. What? I don't think there is. We are going to have a quiz on Friday in class over this material, but we're not going to have a class. Let's see here. So look at that, October 27, a Thursday, an open day. What do you know? I think I'll leave it open. Is that okay with you guys? People who haven't spoken in years suddenly spoke up with a big, strong, yes, 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 yes. The old joke about a child who never spoke. His parents took him to every physician and therapist for years. He was 7 years old. He hadn't spoken a word. Suddenly one morning, mom sits down his bowl of oatmeal that he has every morning. He takes a bite and says in clear spoken English in full sentences, "Mom, this oatmeal is cold." And his mother turns in shock and amazement and says, "Son, you spoke. You've never spoken before. What's going on? What happened?" And he said, "Well, up to now, the oatmeal's been fine." Never mind. Okay. See, you see why I'm a biochemist and not a stand-up comic. You understand why 10,000 comedians out of work and you got to listen to me with my literally lame jokes. I'm so sorry. But anyway, so you get the idea where you can use Excel to do this and plot this stuff out. On Friday, we'll do a quick review of this and I'll hand out some homework for you. And it'll be fun. It'll be good. You'll enjoy it. And you can see all kinds of useful information out of it. What I'd like you to do is use this data eventually. If you want to go forth and conquer, I'd like you to try and figure out what the KM and Vmax is for this data. You can either do it by hand or use Excel and see if you can figure out exactly what is going on there. Have you guys ever used the idea of the trend line? Yeah. And when you do the trend line, you can get an equation ask for it to display the equation on the trend line, and bingo, you got your Lineweaver-Burk data, just like that. So the trend line is very important. Did you do this in, and I'm just curious, did you do this in systems phys? You didn't sell Malek. Oh, okay. So you just get it everywhere. But you didn't do it in systems phys. No calculations? Not as much. Okay. All right. Well, oh. Why is it not moving? Well, of course, I had to unplug it. Let's go ahead, shall we? All right. Now, so we're going to go through this and look at this idea. Now, here you have the enzyme substrate. Here you have the enzyme and product. And the between here, it's basically a big black box. You got the in going in and the out going out, and you're not really sure. The enzyme could be going through an enzyme substrate, an EX, an EP, and then finally this. Or you could be going through an ES to an EX over there, or an EY, going to an EP, and finally this. So you don't really know what this black box is. Now, steady-state kinetics, which is what the kind of kinetics that we typically be dealing with in Lineweaver-Burk plots, can't really distinguish between these two. But fortunately enough, what you find is that most enzyme reactions are bisubstrate, and you can use bisubstrate reactions to help probe this. But you could use the kinetics to eliminate proposed mechanisms. For example, here you've got an enzyme that goes from A plus B under the influence of an E to produce the product P and Q. The mechanism might be that you have the enzyme here, you have some product initially formed, and you have the B substrate come in and it replaces the product and you get a BX. In other words, that there's some intermediate in between this thing right here. And when you look at the substrate reactions, for example, like this one right here, you can see where you have this particular substrate, which is an alcohol, and the NADH, and you get two different products out of it. Well, how can you distinguish what kind of reaction there is with they've got two different changed reactants and two different changed products? What's going on up here? Does this help us any when we look at some of these possible intermediates that are involved in this overall product, in over this overall mechanism? Well, we'll have to see. Let's see what else is going on. What other possible bisubstrate mechanisms are there? All right, so we're looking at possible bisubstrate mechanisms. We see that they're important in many kinds of enzymatic reactions, very common ones. These are more complicated than Lineweaver-Burk assumptions or the Michaelis-Menten equation, but they're much more powerful because they're much more realistic. So you can look at them as a single displacement or double displacement. The majority of the reactions appear to be, I think, is that it on that page? Okay, there are three blanks: ordered, random, and ping pong. Ordered by substrate, random by substrate, and ping pong by substrate. Ordered, random, and ping pong. Okay, so let's take a look at the ordered by substrate. Single displacement means that there's only one thing, one reactant, or one product. One reactant and one product at a time. So you have the A comes in, attaches the enzyme, then the B comes in, and you get a complex that's the EAB complex, the enzyme EAB complex. At that point, the catalytic mechanism initiates, and the enzyme produces both the P and the Q simultaneously. P falls off, the Q remains, and the Q falls off then, in that order. A attaches first, then B, P leaves, and then Q leaves, in that order. That's why they call it an order by substrate. You can have what's known as a random by substrate that's also single displacement. Here you have the free enzyme, and either the A
or the B can bind first. Either the A or the B can bind first. So if A binds first, you get this EA. If B binds first, you get the EB. At that point, then B can bind, can form the EAB, or A can bind to form the EAB. Then once both are attached in any particular in order, because it didn't matter what order they were attached, you produce the two products. The P can leave first, or the Q can leave first, or the Q can leave first, and the P can leave second. So it's either P first, Q second, or P first, Q first, P second. And whatever happens, the enzyme is free, and then you can start the whole process over again. Notice, why do they call it random by substrate? Does it matter how the substrates add to it? Say no. Does it matter how the products leave? No. So that's why it's random. Then you have the double displacement, also called a ping pong substrate. And notice, if you would, the little copyright. Ping pong is actually a copyrighted term. What is the actual non-copyrighted term for ping pong? Table tennis. Correct. So ping pong is somebody's copyrighted term for the table tennis units that they produce. But they call it ping pong here. They don't call it table tennis. And I don't know of anybody that has objected to it. All right, so this is kind of fun. A goes on to the free enzyme. Then the A binds to the enzyme. But at some point, the A modifies the enzyme, and the enzyme now becomes a covalently modified enzyme called F, which produces the product P. The P leaves. You have the modified enzyme remaining. B attaches to the F. You get FB. B modifies F. F modifies B. You get now the restored enzyme and the final product Q, and the Q falls off, and you get E again. Do you understand why it's called the ping pong mechanism? Back and forth. A, P, B, Q. A, P, B, Q. Bisubstrate mechanisms. These are the most common and the most useful mechanisms to understand. Let's go ahead. Let's take a look at inhibition. Inhibition is a powerful way of discovering the actual mechanisms that we're going through. So you have the Lineweaver-Burk. I mean, you have the Michaelis-Menten type of enzyme mechanism. What's the Michaelis-Menten mechanism? Can someone tell me here? Enzyme plus substrate equals what? Yields what? Reversibly? Is that correct? Then we get AES. And then what? Enzyme and the product. Is that correct? What are the microscopic rate constants here? What's this one called? K1. What's this one called? K-1. And this is called what? K2. Is given another name. What is that other name of it? Up. Too far. Ding, 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 ding. What else is it named? Let's see here. It's also known as what? K2 is the equivalent to what? So this is also can be called K-cat. K-cat. So K2 is many times called K-cat. So these are interchangeable. Interchangeable. And there we go. Boom. All right. So here we go. So you got a variety of mechanisms going on here. This is overhead number 12. We're looking at enzyme inhibition. For example, enzymes can be inhibited reversibly or irreversibly. So the first blank is reversibly. The second blank on overhead 12 is active. The third blank is reversible. Reversible. Type in reversible, write in reversible in the blank. And the last blanks is called Lineweaver-Burk plot, which we just saw earlier and gave you a quick overview of how you might do that, but is now formally introduced as a Lineweaver-Burk plot. So let's take a look. Here you have succinate under the influence of succinate dehydrogenase producing fumarate.
Now, you recall that, of course, from the Krebs cycle. But that same enzyme in the presence of succinate and fumarate, if there's malate also present, there's no reaction. So the presence of malate stops the production of fumarate. How does that happen? What's happening with the mechanism that this malate can inhibit the succinate dehydrogenase? All right, well, anyway, so active site, enzymes may be inhibited reversibly or irreversibly. Of course, irreversibly is what they call, that's a permanent binding to the enzyme that prevents it from behaving properly. Reversibly means that the inhibitor is going to fall off at some time, and the enzyme then can become active. Reversible inhibitors may active, may bind at the active site of the enzyme or some other site, and it can be inhibited by this reversible. Penicillin is irreversible suicide inhibitor. Now, the term reversible suicide inhibitor, I'm kind of repeating myself. It's like saying Department of Redundancy Department. Okay. Because irreversible and suicide are thought to be basically the same thing. A suicide inhibitor means that you come in, and if you're the enzyme and I'm the inhibitor, I grab onto you, and that's it. We're not letting go, okay? I'm done. I'm toast. I'm not going to inhibit anybody else. I've just linked my fate to the fate of that enzyme. Well, of course, what's going to happen if this enzyme is no longer active? The body is going to eventually detect it. And what's going to happen to that enzyme? It's going to be broken down by the lysosome. And lysosome, I'm not going to permanently hold your hand, delightful although that be. So irreversible and suicide many times are kind of redundant in this phrase, but I just wrote it in there anyway. So this is now something called a competitive inhibitor. How much of the free enzyme is occupied by an inhibitor? I want you to note this mechanism, and this is the last thing I can say. I want you to note the mechanism here, the mechanism with the style of graph that you get from that mechanism. The questions will be on the test when you have these different slopes, different styles of inhibition, what's happening with the mechanism to produce that kind of mathematical result. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see each other on Friday, and I'll have a little 5-question multiple choice quiz for you over the stuff we've covered this week. Yeah. What? No class tomorrow. Yay. Well, that's what's scheduled. We'll go by the schedule, even though we're pretty far behind. That's just the nature of the beast.
This is my Father's word, and to my listening ears, all nature sings and around me rings the music of the sphere. This is my Father's world, the birds their carols raise, the morning light, the lily white, the panamaker's praise. This is my Father's world, he shines in all. My Father's world.